If you watch the news, you know there's been a lot going on in the world the last 2 years. Everyone knows about the coronavirus pandemic. After 2 years, there's still no official conclusion about how it started. And we know it came from Wuhan, China. But did it come from a wet market or a virology lab that was studying coronaviruses? The latest assessment conducted by the U.S. intelligence community says this: we judge the virus was not developed as a biological weapon. Most agencies also assess with low confidence that SARS-CoV-2 probably was not genetically engineered. However, two agencies believe there was not sufficient evidence to make an assessment either way. After examining all available intelligence reporting and other information, though, the intelligence community remains divided on the most likely origin of COVID-19. All agencies assess that two hypotheses are plausible: natural exposure to an infected animal and a laboratory-associated incident. Four intelligence community elements and the National Intelligence Council assess with low confidence that the initial SARS-CoV-2 infection was most likely caused by natural exposure to an animal infected with it or a close progenitor virus, a virus that probably would be more than 99% similar to SARS-CoV-2. These analysts give weight to China's officials' lack of foreknowledge, the numerous vectors for natural exposure, and other factors. One intelligence community element assesses with moderate confidence that the first human infection with SARS-CoV-2 most likely was the result of a laboratory-associated incident, probably involving experimentation, animal handling, or sampling by the Wuhan Institute of Virology. These analysts give weight to the inherently risky nature of work on coronaviruses. I have an opinion on this, but I'll keep that to myself. China's cooperation most likely would be needed to reach a conclusive assessment of the origins of COVID-19. Beijing, however, continues to hinder the global investigation, resists sharing information, and blame other countries, including the United States. These actions reflect in part China's government's own uncertainty about where the investigation could lead, as well as its frustration the international community is using the issue to exert political pressure on China. Well, another interesting thing about the pandemic was how the government, the U.S. government and other governments around the world, responded to it. The lockdowns, mask mandates, mandatory treatment protocols, vaccine mandates, and others are still common, but it's all being questioned. And there's much disagreement, primarily along political lines. However, senators on the Senate Health Committee have proposed forming a 12-member COVID-19 panel appointed by Democrats and Republicans to investigate the origin of the coronavirus pandemic and the response. An article written by a New York Times reporter a couple months ago said this: a broad and bipartisan group of senators is coalescing around legislation to create a high-level independent commission modeled after the one that examined the September 11th attacks. With broad powers to investigate the origins of the coronavirus pandemic and the response across the Trump and Biden administrations. Under a plan proposed by the top Democrat and Republican on the Senate Health Committee, Senators Patty Murray of Washington and Richard Burr of North Carolina, a 12-member panel would have subpoena power to get a full accounting of what went wrong during this pandemic, Ms. Murray said in an interview. And she said, and to make recommendations for the future. I don't know if that bill's even been brought up for vote yet, but be interesting to see if it gets passed. And if it does, I think it'll be very interesting to read their report. China, in the last 3 or 4 decades, has grown in power and influence around the world. It's using up vast oil and other vital resources from the Middle East and Africa. It's a manufacturing center for much of the world, and it now has a navy that rivals the U.S. Navy. Russia, also exerting its influence around the world. As you know, right now it's invading Ukraine, and some are concerned that Vladimir Putin wants to rebuild the Soviet Union. European countries are reluctant to interfere because they depend on the oil and gas from Russia. Of course, I read that Russia has now cut off the natural gas to Europe. So he's pushing his luck. Russia has vast supplies of oil and natural gas. Of course, they also have a large military and a nuclear arsenal. But if threatened, Europe could react. Europe has the largest economy in the world, and it has the potential to become a military power equal to the United States. So how does all this fit into prophecy? You know, where are we in prophecy right now? Do we need to be concerned? What should we be doing? Well, I'm going to try to answer those questions today. Please turn with me to Daniel chapter 11. Daniel 11, and we'll begin with verse 40. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, with horsemen, and with many ships, and he shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. He shall also enter the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. But these shall escape from his hand, Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon. He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over treasures of gold and silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt. Also the Libyans and Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. But news from the east and the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many. And he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him. So this is a prophecy about the end time that God revealed to Daniel. And this describes events that will lead up to a time of trouble the world has never seen. Let's continue in chapter 12, Daniel 12, verse 1. At that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. So God revealed to Daniel that there's going to be a time of trouble never seen before. Troubles at the time of the end are going to escalate until they reach a point where mankind would be destroyed. This time of trouble has not come yet, but we're getting close. Let's drop down to verse 4, Daniel 12, verse 4. But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. So this verse says the book of Daniel will be sealed until the time of the end. And verse 8 says that Daniel didn't understand these prophecies. but we understand them today. The time of the end is described as a time of increased travel and communication and an explosion of knowledge. And we see that today. We can jump on an airplane and fly almost anywhere in the world. We have cell phones and email, and with the internet, we can Google anything we want to know and instantly get the information we're looking for. Several centuries after Daniel's time, Jesus spoke to his disciples about the end time. Please turn to Matthew chapter 24. Matthew 24. Oh, I should have told you to mark your place in Daniel 12 because we will be coming back to that. Matthew 24. Let's first read verses 21 and 22. For then there will be great tribulations, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. So Jesus' words here are very similar to what Daniel wrote in Daniel 12, verse 1. Jesus says plainly that no one would survive this time of trouble or great tribulation unless those days were shortened. And Jesus also said there in verse 22, but for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Now, this too is also similar to what Daniel wrote in Daniel 12, verse 1. He wrote, and at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book. So God's going to deliver his people from the time of trouble and tribulation that's going to come. So prophecy includes both good news and bad news. God has revealed the events that are going to take place during the end time to serve as a warning and to give us hope. Jesus' longest prophecy about the end time, known as the Olivet Prophecy, is found in Matthew 24. We just read part of it. Mark 13 and Luke 21. Now, since we're already here in Matthew 24, let's go back up to and begin with verse 1. Matthew 24, verse 1. Then Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came up to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, do you not see all these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down. This took place during the week leading up to Jesus' crucifixion, after he and his disciples had come to Jerusalem. And his disciples admired the beautiful buildings of the temple, and they expected Jesus to be impressed too. But Jesus shocked them when he said that the buildings were going to be destroyed. Jesus and his disciples then left the temple and climbed the Mount of Olives to supposed to enjoy a view of the city and the temple. And the disciples were still thinking about what Jesus said was going to happen to the temple. So let's continue in verse 3. Now, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? Jesus' disciples asked the same question we would ask if we had the opportunity. Verse 4. And Jesus answered and said to them, take heed that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. I am the Christ, or I represent Christ. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. So Jesus answered his disciples and described events that have taken place over the past 2,000 years. He described trends and events that would occur repeatedly over time, but get worse before his return. He told them that there would be false prophets, wars, famines, pandemics, and earthquakes. But this is not the end. It is the beginning of the troubles and turmoil that will increase in intensity and magnitude as we get closer to the end. Verse 9, then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. All right, so now beginning here with verse 9, we are talking about that time of trouble, the also referred to as the Great Tribulation. Jesus described other signs that will mark the increasingly threatening time of the end. The persecution of God's people will happen again, but this time it's going to be on a worldwide scale. We will be hated by all nations. And we can see it beginning. We can see the persecution and the attitudes that people have toward Christianity. But this time of tribulation is not here yet. As these verses describe, as the conditions get worse, frightened people will become even more afraid and will betray one another. As lawlessness and hostility increase, people will abandon God and his way of life and will turn on each other. I think these verses in Matthew are talking about God's people. But Jesus said, he who endures to the end shall be saved. Jesus gives another sign in verse 14. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come. Jesus told his disciples that the gospel will be preached in all the world as a witness to all nations before the end comes. I'm not sure exactly how this is going to be done, but maybe it will be completed by the two witnesses. Regardless, I think it will be encouraging to see that happen. Verse 15. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath. I think this is talking about Jerusalem, just before Jerusalem is attacked. We know that Satan will do everything he can to disrupt God's plans, and he will inspire his followers to take control of Jerusalem. Luke 21, verse 24 records Jesus as saying, Jerusalem will be trampled by Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. And then we'll read verses 21 and 22 again. For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. I was thinking about Jerusalem. Jerusalem has fallen to outsiders before, including the Romans, Arabs, Turks. But Jesus told his disciples that Gentiles will gain control of Jerusalem in a time of unprecedented global crisis, and that it will instigate a war that will destroy every human being on the earth if God did not intervene. Other prophecies in Daniel and Revelation tell us this time of great tribulation, the time that the city of Jerusalem will be controlled by the Gentiles, and the time that the two witnesses will prophesy, and the time God's people will be protected will be 3.5 years. Did you catch that? The time of the great tribulation, the time the city of Jerusalem will be controlled by the Gentiles, the time the two witnesses will prophesy, and the time Revelation says that God's people will be protected will be 3.5 years. Let's go back to Daniel 12 now. We'll pick up where we left off. Now I got to find my place in Daniel. I didn't mark my place either. All right, let's begin with verse 5, Daniel 12, verse 5. Then I, Daniel, looked, and there stood two others, one on this riverbank and the other on that riverbank. And one said to the man clothed in linen, Who was above the waters of the river? How long shall the fulfillment of these wonders be? Then I heard the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand to heaven, and swore by him who lives forever, that it shall be for a time, times, and half a time. And when the power of the holy people has been completely shattered, all these things shall be finished. So this is going to be a great persecution of God's people. These verses indicate that the time of the end is the period leading up to and including the time of trouble. They also indicate that the time of trouble, which is referred to in Matthew as the Great Tribulation, will last for a time, times, and half a time, or in other words, 3.5 years. Now let's turn to Revelation chapter 11. Here an angel reveals to the Apostle John how long Gentiles will control the city of Jerusalem. It's Revelation chapter 11. And we'll begin with verse 1. Then I was given a reed like a measuring rod, and the angel stood, saying, "Rise and measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there. But leave out the court which is outside the temple, and do not measure it, for it has been given to the Gentiles, and they will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. So he says the Gentiles will tread the city underfoot for 42 months, which is also 3.5 years. In the next verse, we read about the two witnesses, Revelation 11, verse 3. And I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. So here we see the two witnesses prophesy 1,260 days. Again, 3.5 years. In the next chapter, we read that God's people, depicted as a woman, will be protected from Satan's persecution for 3.5 years. Revelation 12. Let's begin with verse 12. Therefore, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows he has a short time. Now, when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time, and times, and half a time, from the presence of the serpent. So we see in these prophecies in the end time that the focus is on a 3.5-year period of trouble, a time of trouble so terrifying and threatening to human survival that God must intervene. In the Olivet prophecy, Jesus said there would be wars, famines, pestilences, and earthquakes leading up to the end. In the 20th century, for the first time in history, we saw two world wars that caused terrible suffering and the deaths of tens of millions of people. And we've seen many wars since then. But the last world war, World War II, ended 76 years ago. However, we now have the capability to destroy all of mankind many times over. Many countries now have arsenals of nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons that could kill every human being on the earth. Many people have died because of famines. Millions died of starvation in the 20th century in India, Africa, China, the Soviet Union, Cambodia, and Ethiopia. But they didn't all starve of natural conditions. Famines can also be caused by bad policies and practices, or interruptions in the economy or transportation systems as a result of war. The countries with the highest population growth rates are in Africa and Asia, and most of them are countries that are least able to provide for their growing populations. Weather disruptions in those areas could bring food shortages very quickly. Millions have died from various diseases. We are all aware of how quickly a new virus can spread and become a global pandemic. More than 5 million people have died of COVID-19 worldwide. The Spanish flu pandemic of 1918, the most severe pandemic in recent history, killed more than 20 million people worldwide. So, you know, you see that these things are increasing in intensity. We're talking mainly about things that happened in the 20th century and the beginning of the 21st century, where we are now. For years, AIDS was in the headlines. And there are still hundreds of thousands of people dying from AIDS each year. More than 36 million people have died of AIDS since the first outbreak in 1981. There are also chemical and biological weapons that can cause disease and death. We regularly hear about earthquakes in the news. Earthquake zones include some of the most densely populated areas of the world, like the west coast of the U.S., Italy, southeastern Europe, Turkey, the Philippines, Taiwan, Indonesia, and Japan. There have been more than 25 earthquakes since 1900 that have killed more than 10,000 people, including 7 that caused the deaths of more than 100,000 people. The highest number of deaths was from an earthquake that hit Haiti on January 12, 2010. Very recent, just 12 years ago. And that earthquake killed around 316,000 people. Jesus' Olivet prophecy, recorded in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, gives us a brief summary of the events and conditions leading up to his return. But later, 60 years later, he revealed more of the specifics about the end time to the Apostle John. This prophecy is in the book of Revelation. Here we find, again, the outline of the prophecy Jesus gave on the Mount of Olives, but with a lot of symbolism and additional details. So let's turn to Revelation chapter 4 now. Just back a few pages if you're still in Revelation. Revelation chapter 4, beginning with verse 1. After these things I looked, and behold, a door standing open in heaven. And the first voice which I heard was like a trumpet speaking with me, saying, "Come up here, and I will show you things which must take place after this." Immediately I was in the Spirit, and behold, a throne set in heaven, and one sat on the throne. Now let's go to chapter 5, Revelation 5, beginning with verse 1. And I saw in the right hand of him who sat on the throne a scroll written inside and on the back, sealed with seven seals. Then I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, "Who is worthy to open the scroll and to loose its seals?" And no one in heaven or on earth or under the earth was able to open the scroll or look at it. So I wept much because no one was found worthy to open and read the scroll or to look at it. But one of the elders said to me, "Do not weep. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has prevailed to open the scroll and to loose its seven seals." So John focuses on a scroll that God holds in his right hand that lists end time events. And only Jesus Christ is worthy to open the scroll and unleash these end time events. And they include the events prophesied throughout the Bible to take place during the time of the end, during the final 3.5 years. We read in Daniel that the things God revealed to Daniel were to be sealed until the time of the end. Well, the book of Revelation, on the other hand, was not to be sealed. Revelation 22, verse 10 says, "And he said to me, 'Do not seal the words of the prophecy of this book, for the time is at hand.'" The book of Revelation, as I mentioned, was written about 60 years after Jesus gave the Olivet prophecy, around 90 AD. And the book of Revelation was written so that God's people could understand what is prophesied to take place at the time of the end. The end time prophecies found in Daniel and other places in the Bible began to be understood when the book of Revelation was written. The prophecies in the book of Revelation extend from the time of the apostles to today and beyond. The seven seals describe the events before and during Jesus' return to the earth. So let's continue in chapter 5, Revelation chapter 5. Let's continue in verse 6. "And I looked, and behold, in the midst of the throne and of the four living creatures, and in the midst of the elders stood a lamb as though it had been slain, having seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into all the earth. And he came and took the scroll out of the right hand of him who sat on the throne." So Jesus Christ takes the scroll, opens its seals, and reveals the contents of the scroll. The contents of the first six seals are described in chapter 6. Most of the remainder of the book of Revelation is devoted to the seventh seal, which describes the time of God's judgment. It's described as, or referred to as, the day of the Lord. So the first five seals describe the conditions prior to the day of the Lord. The conditions that bring us to the point where God's intervention and judgment are necessary. They describe Satan's deception of mankind at the time of the end, his persecution of the saints, and war with all of its terrible consequences, which is the result of Satan's deception. So the first five seals describe events that will affect large numbers of people, including some of God's people. And the sixth seal describes signs and wonders in heavens announcing God's wrath and judgment are imminent. So let's turn to chapter 6 now, Revelation chapter 6. And let's begin with verse 1. Now I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures saying with a voice like thunder, "Come and see." And I looked, and behold, a white horse. He who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. So this first seal is about false religion. The horseman appears similar to Jesus Christ, but he's different. He's an imposter and a deceiver. This parallels Matthew 24, verses 4 and 5, where Jesus said, "Take heed that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many." This deception began in the days of the apostles, but it will be greatest in the last days. Verse 3. When he opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature saying, "Come and see." Another horse, fiery red, went out, and it was granted to the one who sat on it to take peace from the earth, and that people should kill one another. And there was given to him a great sword. So the second seal is about war. It parallels Matthew 24, verse 6, where Jesus said, "And you will hear wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet." As I mentioned earlier, there have already been many wars, including two world wars, and it will continue until the time of the end. Verse 5. When he opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, "Come and see." So I looked, and behold, a black horse, and he who sat on it had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, "A quart of wheat for a denarius, and three quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil and the wine." So the third seal is about scarcity of food and famines resulting from war. This parallels Matthew 24, verse 7, where Jesus said, "For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines." At the time of the end, the military conflicts will lead to severe and widespread shortages of food and other necessities. Verse 7. When he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature saying, "Come and see." So I looked, and behold, a pale horse. And the name of him who sat on it was Death, and Hades followed with him. And power was given to them over a fourth of the earth to kill with sword, with hunger, with death, and by the beasts of the earth. So the fourth seal is about the death toll resulting from the famines. And this also parallels Matthew 24, verse 7, where Jesus mentioned pestilences in addition to famines. The famines that occur in the time of the end, or at the time of the end, will result in starvation, disease, and violence. And these conditions may affect some of God's people, but we know that God promises to help his people. Verse 9, when he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth?" Then a white robe was given to each of them, and it was said to them that they should rest a little while longer, until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren, who would be killed as they were, was completed. At the time of the end, you know, during this great tribulation, just before the day of the Lord, more of God's people will be martyred. And this parallels Matthew 24, verses 9 through 12, where Jesus said, "Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold." And then Jesus said in verse 21, "For then will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be." So the worst time of persecution and martyrdom will occur at the time of the end, just prior to the sixth seal. This time, just prior to the heavenly signs, will be the time of Satan's wrath. And this corresponds to the time of the Great Tribulation that will last for 3.5 years. Again, that's the time of Satan's wrath, the 3.5 years. Please turn forward now to Revelation chapter 12. And let's read verses 7 through 13. Revelation 12, beginning with verse 7. "And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought, but they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him." Verse 10. "Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, 'Now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren, who accused them before our God day and night, has been cast down. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. And they did not love their lives to the death. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows he has a short time." The end time persecution and martyrdom of God's people will occur at the time of Satan's wrath. Satan will be very angry because he knows, because he will then know that he has a short time, and he will cause those under his influence to hate and to try to destroy anyone who represents God. Let's continue with verse 13. "Now when the dragon saw that he had been cast down to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent." So as I mentioned earlier, the woman represents God's faithful people. And it appears that most of them will escape to a place where they will be protected from Satan's wrath. They will be protected for a time, times, and half a time, which, as I mentioned before, is 3.5 year period. However, we know that not all of God's people will escape. Some will be martyred, as we read in Revelation 6, verse 9. Let's continue in Revelation 12, verse 15. "So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged with the woman and went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ." So Satan will go after those who do not escape. But God will still be with them. Even if they were martyred, God will be with them. You remember what happened to Stephen in the book of Acts. He was stoned to death, but God was with him. Remember, he looked up and he could see God the Father on his throne and Jesus Christ at his right hand as he was being stoned. Obviously, God was with him. Let's go now to Revelation chapter 11. Just back one page in my Bible. And let's begin again with verse 1. Revelation 11, verse 1. Then I was given a reed like a measuring rod, and the angel stood, saying, "Rise and measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there, but leave out the court which is outside the temple, and do not measure it, for it has been given to the Gentiles. And they will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. And I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth." So these verses also indicate that 3.5 years will pass from the beginning of Satan's time of wrath and his attack on God's people until Jesus returns and he's bound. So this time of Satan's wrath, known as the Great Tribulation, will begin after the fifth seal is opened. All right, now let's go back to chapter 6 and read about the sixth seal in verses 12 through 14. Revelation chapter 6, verse 12. "I looked when he opened the sixth seal, and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became like blood, and the stars of heaven fell to the earth, as a fig tree drops its late figs when it is shaken by a mighty wind. Then the sky receded as a scroll when it is rolled up, and every mountain and island was moved out of its place." So the sixth seal is about the heavenly signs preceding the time of God's wrath. And this parallels Matthew 24, verse 29, where Jesus said, "Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven and the powers of the heavens will be shaken." Okay, let's continue reading now in Revelation chapter 6 and read what follows the heavenly signs. Revelation 6, verse 15. "And the kings of the earth, the great men, the rich men, the commanders, the mighty men, every slave and every free man, hid themselves in the caves and in the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, 'Fall on us and hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath has come, and who is able to stand?'" Okay, so this is the time of God's wrath. And the length of the period of God's wrath or judgment is implied in the expression, "the great day of his wrath." In other prophecies, such as Numbers 14, verse 34, Ezekiel 4, 4 through 6, God indicates that a day represents a year of punishment. Also, Isaiah 34, verse 8, which says, "For it is the day of the Lord's vengeance, the year of recompense for the cause of Zion." So Isaiah 34, verse 8, also indicates that the day of the Lord's vengeance represents a year of punishment. So, if that principle applies here, the day of the Lord, or the day of his wrath, will overlap the last year of the 3.5 years of Satan's wrath, and it will be the final year before Jesus returns. The day of the Lord is the subject of the seventh seal, but the opening of the seventh seal isn't mentioned until Revelation chapter 8. We don't have time to go through all of it. Most of the rest of Revelation is about the seventh seal. But the seventh seal describes seven other aspects of end time events, and each one is announced with a trumpet blast. Right, we got seven seals. Then once the seventh seal is open, you have seven trumpet blasts and seven plagues. In the first four of these plagues, God strikes the earth and our environmental support systems. The fifth trumpet's plague inflicts terrible pain on those refusing to obey God. In the sixth trumpet plague, God allows a horrible and destructive world war to begin, Then the seventh trumpet announces Jesus' return and the coming of God's kingdom to the earth. Please turn with me to chapter 10, Revelation chapter 10, and let's read verse 7. Revelation 10, verse 7. But in the days of the sounding of the seventh angel, when he is about to sound, the mystery of God would be finished, as he declared to his servants, the prophets. You know, we understand the mystery of God, God's plan of salvation for mankind. That's what he's referring to here, that at the sounding of the trumpet, the mystery of God would be finished. The mystery of God was briefly alluded to in the Garden of Eden. It's all throughout the Bible. Its meaning was revealed to the patriarchs and prophets and the apostles, whose prophecies are found throughout the Bible. Okay. Let's now go to chapter 11, just over on the next page in my Bible. Revelation 11, verse 15. Then the seventh angel sounded, and there were loud voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. So we see that God is in control. Every detail will be carried out according to his time frame. As Jesus concluded his Olivet prophecy in Luke 21, verses 34 through 36, he warned his disciples who would live during the end time. Let's turn there. Luke 21, and we'll begin with verse 34. Luke 21, verse 34. But take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of this life, and that day come on you unexpectedly. For it will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch, therefore, and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all the things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. God has promised to watch over and care for his people during the great tribulation that is coming. There's nothing wrong with wanting to avoid suffering and the end time events that are prophesied to happen. In verse 36, Jesus encourages us to be alert and aware of our spiritual condition and the events and condition of the world, and to pray that we will be worthy to escape the terrible time of trouble that's coming. Prophecy serves as a warning and to strengthen our hope and faith in the future. God gives us an outline and sequence of prophetic events, but many details are unclear. Some things we can see clearly, but others are beyond our understanding at this point in time. In the meantime, we should listen to Jesus' warning in Matthew 24, verse 44. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect.